Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Metzia Daf Samach Ches, and we will begin on Daf Samach Zayin Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Says the Gemara, Rav Kahana v'Rav Papa Rav Ashi, by Achli b'Nachyaisa. As we discussed in the previous shiur, Nachyaisa means that if a loiva gives a malva a mashkin, and they agree up front that every year a certain amount will be deducted from the loan, irrespective of if that's the actual amount that was benefited from that mashkin, that's all that's deducted from the loan. And since, as we explained in the previous year, it does have some sort of an appearance of ribis, because it's not really equal. The amount that's being taken from the field is not really equal to what was really eaten. So as the Gemara said in the previous year, Suvim Rabbon and Talmid Chachamim avoided using this method. Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, Lo Achli B'Nachyaisa. However, Ravina, Ocha B'Nachyaisa. Ravina did follow this method. And Rishonim, starting with Tosfos, discuss why didn't Ravina take the same approach, that it's inappropriate for a Talmud Chacham to rely on this method. The simplest pshat that the Rishonim offer is that Ravina did not want to present himself as a Talmud Chacham, as a Tzuvim Rabbanan, that other people, that maybe Talmud Chacham is more stringent, he didn't want to take that approach. The obvious difficulty with that teretz is that you could say that you don't want to be considered, or you don't want to consider yourself a Talmud Chacham when it comes l'kula, to use that status for a leniency. But to take that approach and end up being mako inappropriately is hard to understand. And therefore the Rishonim give a number of terutzim. One terutz that they give is, as we learned in the previous year, that kitsusa may be a legitimate method for Talmid Chachamim also. And what the Gemara says here, Nachyaisa, it means Kitsusa. Another teretz, and this is a concept that we're going to discuss again today, later in our shir, is that the Gemara in the previous shir distinguished between an Asra the Masalki and an Asra the Loiv Masalki, between a place where the Loiv could request the Malva at any time to leave the Mashkin versus a place where he cannot make such a request. And we said that an Asra the Loiv Masalki, where the Loiv cannot ask the Malva to leave the Mashkin property until a certain time, everybody agrees that Nachyaisa is Mutter. So the Nachyaisa Ravina used was an Asra the Loiv Masalki. And the fourth teretz is, as the Gemara is about to explain why Nachyaisa is a legitimate method, and the Gemara assumes that it's midoraisa, and the Taz explains that wherever the Torah says that something is mutter, even if the Rabbanan would see a reason to say it's usur to make a gzera, they can't make a gzera under those circumstances. Because something that the Torah explicitly says is mutter, they can't say it's usur. The best example that the Taz uses is blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, where perhaps the Rabbanan would say that you should not be allowed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah because Shem Yitakin klishir, you may come to fix the shofar, but then the Torah says to blow the shofar, and the Rabbanan can't tell us not to. Similarly, explaining these Rishonim, Ravina holds that the Torah explicitly tells us that you're allowed to use Nachyaisa. Therefore, Ravina said the Rabbanan cannot say that not to. And that says the Gemara, in fact. Why is Nachyaisa acceptable? Because we find such a precedent by Steichuza. We know there are two types of property that somebody could have in Eretz Yisrael. One is a Stei Mikna, property that he bought, and another is a Steichuza, a property that he inherited. And such a property, if somebody is magdashit, that property can be redeemed, but there's a very specific formula that the Torah uses. The formula the Torah uses is 50 sela for a area large enough to plant a core of barley. Furthermore, this formula, we know that the stayachuza that somebody redeems from Hegdish, when Yovel comes, goes to the Kahanim. So the maximum amount of years anyone can redeem such a property is 49 years. If it's the first year, right after Yovel. If there are less years coming to Yovel, then it would cost less. But let's say it's 49 years. So the formula, based on what the Torah tells us, is a seller or punyan per year. Now that's the amount you'll pay, no matter how much produce the field produces. So we see that the Torah already has this method where you could predetermine an amount, even though it isn't reflective of the actual amount that the field produces. Says the Gemara again. My time the man the ochb and the chayisa, neither to have a steyachuza. We follow the method that the Torah says by steyachuza. Steyachuza lav afagav the ochel peirituva. Even if these fields will produce a lot more than a seller and pudyan worth, Amrachmana, the Torah gives us a specific formula, kaparklei ba'arbezuzei, that you redeem it at arbezuzim, which is a seller and a pudyan, if you want to be exact. You could determine an amount, even though it isn't reflective of the actual value. Ask the Gemara, we've been saying that Nachyaisa is not such a clear-cut heter, and that's why, in fact, Tamidei Chachamim don't rely on Nachyaisa. I hear we have the Torah using such a formula, using such a method. Umanda Asr, why isn't Steyachuza a precedent? Amalach, Steyachuza Hegdashi. They were referring to the situation of Hegdash. Vrachmana okma pidyon, and the Torah gave us a specific formula. However, hocha havahi, here it's hava, and if we won't use the actual amount of peiris that the malva eats to be the formula for the reduction, mechsik ribas. Amar of Ashi, says Rav Ashi, Amali Saba de Masa Mechasya, the elders of Masa Mechasya told me, stam maskanta shata. The average mashkin is a year. And here too we have a machlokes rishonim how to understand the Gemara. Some rishonim say that our Gemara is referring to an asra de mesalki that we've been explaining is a place where the loiva can ask the malva to pay off the malva at any time and ask him to leave the mashkin. Tells us Rav Ashi that exercise, that right can only be exercised after the malva had the mashkin at least for a year, even though it's an asra de mesalki. Another pshat in the Rishonim is as follows. In an asra de mesalki, in a place where the loiva could ask the malva to go off the property, he could ask the malva to do that on day one. Here we're referring to a place, the asra de loiva mesalki, where you can't just ask the malva to go on, or go off. But the question is, they didn't identify in the loan statement how much time does the malva have on the mashkin, no matter what. And if they didn't identify it, he has a year. Again, the Rishonim point out that this Gemara is referring to a situation where there is no known Minig HaMedina. But if there's an established custom in that place, we follow that Minig HaMedina. Ask the Gemara, L'may Nafkamina, now that we said Stam Mishkanta is a year, what is the halach ramification? To teach us, the Ochel Shata, if the malva has been on the property for a year, matzah mesalaklei, then the loiva could pay him off and ask him to leave the mashkin. But if he hasn't been there yet a year, like matzah mesalaklei, he can't exercise his right to pay and tell the malva to leave. Continues the Gemara. V'amar of Ashi omeli sabah de masa mechasya. They also told me, my mishkanta, what is the etymology of the word mishkanta? The shchune gabei. It becomes the possession of the malva. Says the Gemara, L'may Nafkamina, why do I need to know that? Says the Gemara, L'dina de Bametzra. Dina de Bametzra means as follows. The Gemara teaches us, the Pasuk says, V'asisa ha-yosher v'toiv. A Jew has to do what's right. And what right is, that if I'm selling a property, right of first refusal should be given to my neighbors. Because all things being equal, they have more of an advantage in buying this property versus anybody else. Because this property is right next to the property that they already have. So if they're willing to match the price that I could get from someone else, they get right of first refusal. That's Dina de Bametzra. And here we have a machloikus rishonim, how to understand this gemara. Some rishonim say that let's say I have this property that's a mashkin by a malva, and now I decide to sell the property. Dina de Bametzra teaches us that the malva gets right of first refusal before my neighbors even. Why? Because the malva is already on the property. In fact, I saw the Paiskim suggest that let's say my neighbors say to me, you know what, since we know that the malva gets right of first refusal, he's the first customer, so instead of going to some stranger to borrow money from and putting him on the field as a mashkin, borrow money from us so that we should get that first right. Could they make such a demand? Said the Paiskim, they can't make such a demand. Why? Because I could say I prefer to borrow money from that malva, who I know treats the people who borrow money from him nicely, doesn't press them if they can't pay back, versus you may not be so nice to me. So even though you have a vested interest to be on this mashkin, I could choose what's best for me and choose a different malva. Of course, the place can say it has to be done in an honest, truthful manner. Another nafkamina lalocha comes up very, according to this pshat of the Rishonim, comes up quite often. Let's say I own a property, and I have a tenant on the property, and I have a neighbor next to my property, and now I want to sell that property. So the question is, what does Dina de Bametzra teach us? Who gets the first right of refusal? My neighbor, he owns property, or does my tenant, because he's living on the property? If we follow this pshat of the Rishonim, that the Gemara is teaching us that whoever is actually on the property has the first right, so the tenant, even though he doesn't have any ownership in this area, but he's on the property, has right of Bametzra before the neighbors. But there's another pshat in this Gemara. The other pshat is that certainly the malva doesn't have rights before the neighbors. So what is pshat in the Gemara? They explain the Gemara in the following fashion. Let's say, this is the halacha, let's say I sell a property, not to my neighbor, to someone, to a stranger. And my neighbor now comes and says, you should have sold it to me, and I was willing to match the price. The halacha is that the neighbor has such a strong claim that he could void the sale and take over the property. The Gemara is teaching us, that's only if I sold it to a stranger. But let's say I sold it to the malva. I should have not sold it to the malva. I really should have sold it to the neighbor first. But the malva cannot be considered a stranger to the degree that if I did sell it to him, the neighbors could force him out. Rava, says Rava, Les Hilchos Aloi Katarsha Papanoi, the Gemara is going to explain each one of these cases, V'loi Kishtari Mechuznoi, V'loi Kacher Kiri Nashoi. And the Gemara explains, Katarsha Papanoi, what does the Gemara mean? Well, we just learned the other day in Daf Samachay, Katarsha the Rapapa. We learned on Daf Samachay, Rapapa said that the following situation is mutter. Rapapa said he was a beer, he was a merchant of beer, date beer, and in Tishrei, there was an abundance of that beer. And there would be people who would come to him who didn't have money, didn't have cash available, would buy the beer in Tishrei on credit to pay only in Nisan, when the price of this beer goes up because there isn't so much beer available. So Rapapa's attitude was, beer doesn't spoil. He doesn't need the money. So as far as he's concerned, he could wait till Nisan to sell. They want to buy now. He doesn't want to take a loss, and since they're not actually giving him money now, they have to wait, they'll have to pay him in Nisan with the Nisan prices. So from the perspective of Rapapa, there is no ribbis. But as the Gemara pointed out, from the perspective of the buyers, there is ribbis. They're paying more because they're buying on credit. And that's why the Gemara said, that's why our Gemara says that it is considered a situation of ribbis, and it's not mutter. Shtar mechuznoi, what does shtar mechuznoi mean? The Zavchale L'Ravcha Akarna. As we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, this refers to what's known as an Iska. Not exactly the heter Iska that we know is used for ribbis situations, but it's the Iska that the Mishnah, the Gemara, uses. And here what happens is like this. I lend you money, and I anticipate that I'm lending you $100, that you're going to invest in a business that will earn $20. Make the case simple. And we write a shtar that you owe me. So the halacha is that I can't get back profit no matter what. That's ribbis. What we write in the shtar is that I'm going to get back $110. Getting back my principal, the $100, and half the profit. Because by writing that into the shtar, that means I'm guaranteeing a profit on my money, which is ribbis. Machloikus Rishonim, if it's ribbis deraisa, Ravshi seems to call it ribbis ketzutza, because it was identified exactly what my rate will be up front. Others say that it's not ribbis ketzutza. The Papa, the Zatzalel Ravcha Karna, that, as I said, I lend you $100, and we assume there's going to be $20 profit, and I'll get half the profit. For Kosle B'shtar, and we write a document to that effect, because Miyema the Haveri Ravcha. This only assumes that there's going to indeed be profit, and then it would be Mutabr. If there's a loss, then I should have to share in the loss. Amalei Ma'abara Meimel Ravashi. So Amemah's son said to Ravashi, Abba Ovid Hachi, my father did write such a shtar. But what my father would do is if the loiva came and said that he lost money, then he would say, you know what, then I'm not entitled to my money, and I have to take a share in the loss. And that's mutter. If the loiva would come to him, mehemin lahu, he would trust him. So the Rishonim ask, if that's the case, that he entered into an arrangement, which is mutter, that if there'll be profit, he gets half the profit. If there's loss, he takes half the loss, and that's why it's mutter. So why did he write a shtar that says differently? The shtar only said that he gets 110. So Rishonim said that the reason Amemah wrote such a shtar was just to keep the loiva honest. That the loiva should know that he has a shtar that gives him strong power, and he won't take advantage. Amalei.
So the rest is
right, the rest was left. And the Gemara asks you a question, actually. Amateina hechadis l'day. If a Amemah is alive, and a Amemah knows what the arrangement was, so he'll know that if there was a loss, he's not entitled to the money. However, ishachif, what happens if a Amemah passes away? V'nofel shtar kama yasmi, and now the Yisraelim that don't know about this entire history, what will be then? And that's why the shtar should not be written. However, comments the Gemara, have a kishkoga, shiotzim lefnei shalit, they spoke inappropriately, what will be if a Amemah dies? V'noch nafshad Amemah, and a Amemah passed away. Some say, some of Farshim explained, that a Amemah passed away because he wrote the shtar, which was inappropriate, and that was his punishment. Others explain, it's interesting, this is the pshat Rabbi Chanan Vassman says. Rabbi Chanan Vassman says an unbelievable pshat. He says, if you take a knife and you cut something with a sharp knife, it's going to cut, even if you don't mean to cut the item. But if you put a sharp knife on top of something, it's going to cut. The Talmud Chochem's, the tzaddik's mouth, is powerful like a sharp knife. And whatever comes out of the mouth happens. He goes on to say, what's the difference between the Talmud Chochem's mouth and other people's mouth? He says the Talmud Chochem's mouth is like the sharp knife. And other people's knife, we all start off with a mouth like that. But by using our mouth inappropriately, it like gets rusty. And therefore the knife isn't so sharp. The Bnei Soscha explains, why do tzaddikim have this power? He says, because since tzaddikim always are careful only to say the truth, that gives their mouth this power. And in fact, the Sefer Talmid Menhagim and other Sfarim say, this is the source of the minig, that let's say we're making a mishaberach, somebody who's not well, we don't call him a chayla. We say the person's name, but we don't say mishaberach l'chayla. We just say the person's name. Why? Because we don't want to call the person a chayla. Because once we say something, our Gemara is teaching us chas v'shalom kishkogim yotzei b'fnei ha'shalit, and even if he isn't really sick, that could put him into that category. And that's why in other communities, let's say somebody has a very serious illness, they don't call it by that illness. They'll say he has a disease, but they won't identify the disease because, again, of Kishkaga Yotzim of Nei Hashalot. The third thing the Rav Ashi said should not be done is Chakiri Nashoi. What is Chakiri Nashoi? The cost of Hachi. Mashkin Lepanya L'Ara L'Planya. What happened here is that I borrowed money from you and gave you a field as a mashkin, the hoda chakri minei, and then immediately you lease back that property to me that I'll work on the property. Why? Because it looks like rivers. Because what are you going to get? Besides the money that I borrowed from you, I'm also paying you for that lease. And it looks like rivers that you're getting that extra money. Certainly, say to Rishonim, that if as we enter into the loan arrangement, into the loan agreement, we make up that I'm going to give you the field as a mashkin and then I'm going to lease it back and pay you, that may even be ribis ktsutza. But even if it happens later, as we're going to learn, it's also. Amos Kona, back to Nele, because somebody seeing this transaction says, this wasn't your property that I'm buying it back. Rather, it looks like ribis. Comments the Gemara. However, the Idna, the cost of Hachi, nowadays, that the way the document is written, Kanina Menei, you are taking hold of the Mashkin. V'she'ina kame idnei, and now you're going to sit on this Mashkin, shut him say, for 3 years. V'chada chakra, and then you'll lease it back to me. So now it's obvious that it's not ribis, because you were sitting on the Mashkin for 3 years, and therefore perhaps it should be a permissible approach, kadesh lo toladat b'fnei lovin, that it should encourage people to lend money, and therefore shapi dami, says the Gemara v'les b'la milsehi, if it looks, it doesn't look right, even if we had this time in between. However, the Paiskim do point out, there is a way of making this mutter. The way of making a mutter is as follows. I borrow money from you, give you the field as a mashkin, and then you lease the field to someone else. And then the person who you lease it to subleases it to me. So it's not directly from the malva to the loiva, the payment. Rather, the payment is going through a third party. That would be mutter. We now begin the sugya of iska. But as I said a moment ago, the iska that the Gemara calls, the iska that the Gemara refers to is not the iska that is the heter iska that's used. The heter iska that's used nowadays is actually a fairly modern invention. It's about 500-600 years old. This is the iska of the Gemara. There's a Gemara we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem and Daf Ayin that helps put this entire sugya into perspective. If somebody goes into a business transaction that is karv l'schar v'rochik l'hefsid, that he's only can make money, not likely to lose money, that's a rush, because that looks like ribis. I'm guaranteeing my money. If somebody goes into a business transaction that's karv lehefsid for rochak l'schar, that he's probably going to lose money and not make any money, he's a chassid if he's willing to lend money on that basis. Karv lezeh, somebody who does a good deal where everybody can make money or everybody can equally lose money, that's the normal approach. So here we have a situation, and this is the basis, and that's why we're going to spend a moment on this, of the iska. And that is even for the modern iska the basis. There are two people. This happens quite often. There's one person who has money, and there's one person who has ability. I have money. How have I? I have money that I'm ready to lend. And you have the ability to run the business, but you don't have money. So we enter into a business arrangement where I'll finance your business. But if I'll finance your business and take back half the profit or half the loss, it's not something that I'm necessarily going to want to get into because it's a big risk that I take. So what iska says is that half the money, it's the easiest way of explaining an iska, half the money I give you will be a halva, and half the money I'll give you will be a pekadon. A halva is a loan, and when I lend you money, you have to give me back the money. You can't come back and tell me that something happened to the money. There's no dispensation, there's no p'tur of an oinus on a halva. The other half is a pekadon. Pekadon is a whole new halacha. If I give you a pekadon and something happens to the pekadon, there's an oinus beyond your control, then you don't have to give me back the pekadon. So now, when I give you half the money in a halva, half the money is a pekadon, that a profit that you earn, if you lose the pekadon, it's my loss. You lost if you lose the ba'onis. If you lose the Hava, I get back the money no matter what. But now there's only one problem left with this. And for that, you're going to run the business, and I'm going to get the share of the profit and the share of the loss, if there's loss, chas v'shalom. However, you're working not just with the half that's the cotton. You're working with the entire money I gave you. So you're working with the Hava money. Why? Because I gave you a pekadon. So isn't that ribbis? So teaches us our Mishnah, the way to avoid that problem is by, besides getting whatever profit sharing we come up with, I also pay you something above that for working with the Hava money. And that's why it's mutter. For working with the pekadon money, I mean. And that's why it's mutter. Says the Mishnah. I can't let you, I can't enter into arrangement we'll all get half the profit. Furthermore, or I let you run a store where you sell fruit, let's say, and we'll share the profits. Elam Kane, unless, as I just explained, on top of this arrangement, I pay you for what you're doing. Nice and like, exactly how much that is, we'll explain in the Gemara in a moment. Similarly, we can't, again, I have chickens, but I don't have time to raise the chickens. You have the time, but you don't have the chickens. So again, we enter into arrangement that will divide the eggs, lemechza. Again, I have animals, but I don't have the time or the ability to raise them. You don't have the animals, but you have the time and the ability to raise them. Again, we can't enter into an arrangement where we'll divide the profit, lemechza, 50-50. And again, the Rishonim point out it doesn't have to be specifically 50-50. We could use any other proportion. I have to pay you for your bother. And I also have to pay for half of the mazon, for half of the money that's needed to run the business. Avil teaches the Mishnah, in distinction to the previous cases, I can give you these animals that can do work, and you have to raise them until the Mishloshim. Mechlokes Rishonim, what Mishloshim means. Some Rishonim say Mishloshim means until they're a third grown. Others say Mishloshim means until they become 3 years old. The Chamor, or the same arrangement can be made with a donkey, Achteyanis, until it's old enough to carry itself, to carry packages. Here, I don't have to pay you anything more. Why not? So we'll learn in the Gemara that since I'm giving you animals, that besides that the animals will be raised and become worth more and will have children that will have value, you could use the animals for work. So your earnings, your wages, are the fact that you could use these animals for your needs, that you could use an animal. They didn't have cars. So Gemara says, I have to pay you kapoil bottle. What does a kapoil bottle mean? My kapoil bottle, like an idle worker. Omar Abaya, kapoil bottle, shall I sim malach. So Rashi, the bottle mean it. The way Rashi explains it is as follows. There are jobs that are hard jobs. And running a store is not such a hard job. It's not a strenuous job. How much would a person, says Rashi, Pshat in the Gemara, who has a hard job be willing to give up to take the job of running a store? So why did Mefarshim explain Rashi's position is as follows. He's going to get paid more than a regular storekeeper, but he's going to get paid less than his regular job, because everybody would be ready to take a little less money if he wouldn't have to work so hard. That's the pshat that Rashi explains the Gemara. That's the pshat that we're going to use. There's another pshat in the Rishonim, a few other pshatim. I'll quote one other pshat that explains the Gemara as follows. It goes just the opposite. A person is unemployed. So let's say there's a certain salary that storekeepers are paid. But that's a person who could get a job. So he wouldn't take a job unless he gets the regular salary. But let's say you're never a person without a job, and you're desperate for a job, you'll take a lower wage. That's what they say means kapoil bottle. Says the Gemara v'tzricha. We need all the cases of the Mishnah that teach us the same concept, that the iska works, that we share the profit and the loss, and I also have to pay you for your working. If we only spoke about a chenveni, There, I would say perhaps, chen v'nihu the sagalei could buy a bottle. There, it's enough that I should just give you this minimum wage, especially if we use the second shot, where it's a very minimum wage. M'shindaloi nefesh terchei, it's not such a hard job. Ava mos, likach ben peiris, if I want you to start running a whole farm, the nefesh terchei, that's already a hard job, aim v'loi sagalei could buy a bottle. There, I have to pay you a better wage. V'tan meiris, likach ben peiris, having been a hossam to buy a bottle, I have to pay you at least that much. Because you're really putting in work. If I'm asking you just to run a shop, just sell product, it's not such a hard job. Whatever I give you should be enough. The feel like if I just let you eat something, let you dip into my dip, your food into my dip, or I just give you one date, that is already schoroi, that's enough of a wage, tzricha, that's why we need to have it. Tana Rabbanan. So now the Gemara goes again to analyze and discuss how much of a wage must I pay you. Tana Rabbanan, kam schoroi. How much wage do I have to give you? Bein meruba bein ma'at divi Rameya. Machlaikas Rishonim, how to understand Rameya's opinion. Some Rishonim explain Rameya's opinion, that's what the words seem to say, is that whatever I give is fine, as long as it was arranged beforehand, and both of us agree to that wage. Others say, Be'im Ruba Be'im Mu'ut, is another way of saying what we just learned in the previous Gemara, Kescharei Kepoil Bottle. Rabbi Yehuda is much more lenient. Rabbi Yehuda Aymer, I feel like Tavimai El Betzir, even if I just allow you to dip your food into my dip, V'layachalim Al Gregorus Achas, if that's enough of a schar. Rav Shimon Yochayimer, he's the most stringent. He says, "No, it's not schar mishalom. I have to pay you a full wage." Tana Rabban says the Brisa, "Ain't shaman lo yase izin v'lo yase rechelim. We can't go into this arrangement where I give you my animals and you'll raise them, and then we'll share in the profit. V'lo ka dover shein oisav oichel mechza. We can't go into this arrangement if it's a thing that doesn't produce, unless I really pay you a full-fledged wage." Rabbi Yossi Amoda, no. Shamas Iva as Izim Nesha Chavis. The fact that I give you the goats, and you'll be entitled to keep the milk, Veser Chelim Nesha Gozizais, because you could keep the wool, the Shaitvis from Martais, that you could keep the wool, that's the wage, Veser Tanagolis Nesha Oisavachelis. And the chickens also could be used for different purposes, and that will be the wage. The Tanakama, why doesn't the Tanakama agree with this? He says, Giza v'cholov, just giving you the wool or the milk, The Tanakama, Giza v'cholov, le'sipek, le'schar, amolei mezoinai, says the Gemara, why is the Tanakama disagreeing? If I'm giving you all of the milk, I'm giving you all of the wool, I'm certainly giving you something significant. Why shouldn't that be an adequate wage for what you're doing? Answers the Gemara. Begizav acholav, if I'm giving you all of the wool, and I'm giving you all of the milk, kula amalai pligi, that is enough of a wage. Ki pligi, I didn't give you all the milk. I only give you the nesubei. Nesubei is whey. What is whey? If you curdle milk, if you make cheese, and the milk, what is making cheese? You take milk and you let it harden. You let it curdle. You'll be left over with a liquid. Not all of the milk will curdle. That milk, that leftover liquid is called nesubei. Nesubei de chalba, which is known in English as whey. W-H-E-Y. The tutri. Tutri doesn't mean that I'm giving you all of the wool. Tutri means that there are little pieces of wool that fall off the animal. And that, the Tanakama holds, is not a decent wage. Tanakama suffer, and that's the Machlokes explains Gemara. Tanakama suffer like Reb Shimon Yochai. The Tanakama holds like Reb Shimon Yochai of the previous Baisa. Dominos Leschar Mishalayim. I have to give you a full-fledged wage. And these items that we just explained aren't equal to a full-fledged wage. Reb Yais, Reb Yehuda, however, suffer Kavavua. He holds like his father, that holds that filoi tavim my el betzir, filoi achli my el gregers achas. Even a minimal wage is enough of a wage. Zer Scharoi, and that's why letting you keep the way and the wool that falls off is considered a satisfactory wage. Tan Rabban, Maskeres Ish L'Chaverta, a woman could rent to her friend, Tanagoylis, that the friend will raise the chickens, B'Shnei Afroichim, that the wage will be that the friend will get two eggs a year. Isha Sha'am L'Chaverta, if a woman says to somebody else, Tanagoylis Shali, I keep the Tanagoylis, or Beitzim Shalchi, and the eggs are yours, Vaniva At, Nachlak Bechroichim, will shear the chicks that are born, Rav Yehuda Matar, Rav Shimon Isa. Rav Yehuda says that that's acceptable, Isker situation, Rav Shimon says it's unacceptable. Ask the Gemara, Rav Yehuda Labai, Schar Molim Azainai. We kept on explaining from when we learned the Mishnah that if you get into an Isker relationship, you have to give the other party wages. So where are the wages here? Answers the Gemara, Ika Bei Mazaris. Bei Mazaris are eggs that will never fertilize into chicken. The halacha is that those eggs are kosher. And the Chassam Sofer says it's very important that we should point out that those eggs are kosher. Because if those eggs weren't kosher, we couldn't use it to pay a wage. Because there's a din that people sometimes forget of called Schoyer B'davar Osir. You're not allowed to do business with something that's not muta to be eaten. So that's what the Chassam Sofer says, Bei Mazaris, even though finicky people wouldn't eat those eggs, they were considered in those times at least inferior quality, they are kosher, and that's the deal here. I give the chicken, you do the work, we shear all the eggs that could fertilize into a chicken, and the eggs that cannot fertilize, you'll keep as your wage. Tan Rabban, Makam Shinagul Halischa Katef Lamas Lebehema, if on top of what was agreed upon, the person who has to spend money on the person who's going to be managing the business has to lay out money to transport the animals. Alan, I, who invest into the business, have to pay for that fee. The aim is Shannon, Menachem Medina, and we're now allowed to change what is customary in that place. Rav Shimon Gamliel Aimer, Shaman Egalim Imai, Vesayach Imai. If I gave you a calf together with its mother, or I gave you a young donkey together with its mother, tafilu b'makim shenagul halischa katef lemos. Even a place where normally I have to pay transportation costs, here I don't have to pay the transportation costs. The reason being, since these young animals will naturally follow their mother, and therefore since they follow their mother naturally, there's no big tircha involved in transportation, I don't have to pay the transportation costs. Rav Shimon Gamliel loy boy schar molim mezaynei, says the Gemara, even if we're going to explain why transportation costs aren't necessary here, because these young animals follow their parent, but we keep on speaking about from when we started learning the Mishnah that we have to pay the wages of the person who's spending the at the time. So why is that not taken into consideration? If I'm not going to have to pay anything, answers the Gemara, Ikaglolim. There is wages. What are the wages? The wages are that I let the managing partner keep the glolim, keep the manure that's used as fertilizer. Vidach. So what does the other mandam say that I have to pay you? Why can't we identify the glolim as the salary? Says the Gemara, glolim afkuri mafkalahu, glolim are not everybody's mafkar, and you can't use something that everybody's mafkar to be considered the wage I pay you. Just for a moment to mention, since we're speaking about iska, we're going to be speaking about it for the next couple of dafim, what is the difference between the iska that the Gemara identifies and the iska that we have nowadays? Because let's remember, if we're going to follow the iska of the Gemara, it's not that you guaranteed your profit. Because if I'll lend you money to go into a business, so first of all, an iska has to be, and that doesn't change with the modern iska, I have to know that this is not a ribis. I have to know that I'm becoming your partner. But in the iska of the Gemara, as we say, we become partners 50-50. You, if you make money, we're going to share it. And if you lose money, we're going to share the loss. as I said earlier when we learned the Mishnah, we can always identify the rate, how much loss and how much profit. But there has to be a predetermined rate, and it can't be that that it's guaranteed. But we know when we use a heteriska nowadays, if we're going to lend money based on a heteriska, there's a guaranteed rate of interest. How do we get around this problem? So as I said earlier, the heteriska that we rely on is that I lend you money, and again, the purpose of lending you the money is that we're partners, half loiva and half pikadon. But the heteriska says a very important point. It says that if you lose money, you have to do two things. You're going to have to bring edim that you lost the money because it was a real oinus, and you're going to have to swear. And if you refuse to swear, or you can't bring edim to that effect, then instead of swearing and bringing edim, you'll agree to pay me a guaranteed rate. That's why the heteriska works nowadays, because in every heteriska, we're really partners. But what happens is you don't want to swear, because as we know from many different discussions, a shvuah is something that people want to avoid. We always try to avoid a shvuah. So instead of taking the shvuah, you'll pay and not prove that there was an oinus. Where does this become difficult? This question came up because banks, let's say you have a Jewish-owned bank, and your bank is not only your bank, but it's also your broker. So let's say you used your bank, a Jewish bank, to use your money. And then that bank invested, and the stock market went down. And now he knows that it was an oinus, because he was the one that invested the money. So here you can't say that he needs to bring edim. He is the person himself, and there the halacha would be that you cannot pay based on heteriska.